This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The Wall Street Journal headline, strong jobs report pushes unemployment rate towards pre-pandemic levels. 431,000 jobs added in March. Unemployment fell to 3.6%. The labor market is booming as the pandemic recedes, says the Wall Street Journal. I welcome Brett Ahrens of MarketWatch, writing Return on Investment. Brett, I'm certain I was watching Bloomberg just days ago when the yield curve inverted, and that is a guaranteed predictor of recession. So where is it? Why is it not in this headline? It sounds like we're doing well. Good evening to you, Brett.
Good evening. Good evening. Yes, I imagine financial journalists and commentators everywhere are wringing their hands that the economy is failing to perform as predicted. The yield curve is not the predictor, the accurate predictor that it is often held up to be. More importantly, not to get too technical, but the yield curve everyone focuses on is the difference between the 2-year interest rate, the interest rate on 2-year treasury bonds, and the interest rate on 10-year treasury bonds. But as Jim Paulson at Luthold Investments was pointing out not long ago, the much more powerful predictor is the gap between the 10-year interest rate and short-term 3-month bills. And that gap is still very large. So look, there was a brief moment when one of the indicators that scribblers watch, namely the gap between the 2 and the 10-year interest rate, went negative, but it was very brief and it's hovering around, but it may not even be the key one. Look, the economy is doing better than people seemed to assume or expect for a number of reasons. The most important being that large numbers of people are sitting on vast amounts of surplus savings after having spent a lot of the past 2 years under enforced lockdown, and therefore there's a lot of money to be spent. I can tell from my own neighborhood that the bridge and tunnel crowd pour into Boston to go out to restaurants. The minute the freezing rain abates for half a second, they have been locked up with their kids and their dogs for just too long.
The financial press reports routinely gloomy predictions. And you ask in a column just several days past, you ask, why? Because the economy is in good shape. We can see it. We have numbers today. This isn't guessing. The hiring is ferocious out there. And yet the headlines continue to warn. So I'm going to assume that things are better than the headlines tell us. What is it that the headlines are warning us against? What is it that we're doing wrong? Can't we all agree we're in recovery?
Well, we all know that bad news sells. Good news is not news. Bad news is news. There is a vested interest in the media. The media, which reports on the conflict of interest of everybody except the media, there is a vested interest in the media in warning us that it's all doom and gloom and everything's about to fall apart. I was reporting not long ago on Jim Paulson's presentation at Luthold and all the reasons essentially to be bullish, the reasons to be more optimistic than the headlines. Savings, jobs growth. We will see if the rise in inflation in recent months will be sustained. I mean, the reality is the bond market, having worried for a few weeks, is now starting to relax a little bit. I don't want to overstate that, but certainly the headline short-term inflation figures are not being extrapolated out by the economic indicators into the future. The markets are thinking that inflation is going to come back down again.
At the same time, you write a column that is a wartime column. And investing in wartime is a special skill. The Kremlin, the bad guys in this drama, the Kremlin invested heavily in gold. I'm told that they have $130 billion of gold in the basement of the Russian Central Bank in Moscow. Is that wise of them? Is it wise for everybody to acknowledge that the Kremlin knows something?
Well, it's very interesting. I wrote about Putin stockpiling gold a decade ago when he invaded the Ukraine, and the Western banks seized Russia's foreign reserves, I remembered writing about Putin and gold, and I went back and looked in the archives, and lo and behold, it was in 2012 that I wrote a story about how Putin was accumulating gold. His mistake was not accumulating enough and not keeping it in Russia. He has about, Russia has about $650 billion in foreign reserves, but half of those have been seized because they were held at central banks in New York and London and all the rest of it, and they have basically frozen those assets. If Vladimir Putin had converted all of those reserves to gold bullion and shipped it to the Kremlin, he would now have $650 billion to play with instead of $300 billion. So he bought gold, but he should have bought more gold. And I do find it very interesting, the situation with gold, because what was missed by a lot of the financial press a week ago was an extraordinary remark by the finance minister, to the extent that they no longer consider the dollar to be the reserve currency, to be the international currency. For them, it's gold. And they said, basically, you can pay us in, you know, you can pay us in your own national currency if you are a friendly country, if we consider you to be a friendly country like China or India, I think at the moment, or Iran, possibly. You can pay us in rubles if you're an unfriendly country, which is the basis of their current arguments with the European Union. But they said, we will accept gold from anyone. We no longer want dollars. We want gold. So Russia has now basically said they want to leave the dollar economy, the world's, you know, dollarized king dollar. The dollar is the global reserve currency. And the only alternative that they can find at the moment is gold.
Now we come to a revelation. Jeff Bezos is a very well-to-do man, one of the two billionaires that are who are always in the news. But you tell me that Jeff Bezos has finally found a policy from the Biden administration he either rejects or finds an issue with. What is it, Brent?
Yes, President Biden suggested, launched the idea of taxing the wealth of people worth more than $100 million. Lo and behold, we started seeing articles, an article cropped up in the Washington Post denouncing this. The Washington Post, there has been almost no policy, liberal policy that would tax or hit the middle class that the Washington Post didn't embrace. But then all of a sudden, a policy is proposed that wouldn't hit the middle class, would hit people like Jeff Bezos. And, you know, the screaming can be heard all the way from Seattle to Washington.
So be careful what you wish for in wartime. I want a piece of advice about investing in wartime. It appears to be high risk. For example, nobody likes to leave their money in the market over the weekend when there's a war afoot. Is gold a way to secure at some point some aspect of your portfolio? Is that what Putin has taught us? A villain that he is he teaching us an investment lesson? We have about 30 seconds.
Well, actually, I've always been agnostic on gold, but I do think it has a role. And I think one of the interesting things about gold is it's the asset that behaves sort of like nothing else. Gold works when dollars and stocks and bonds all fail. Gold's actually been a good investment this year. So it is very much a bullish sort of positive thing about gold. But more broadly, I think during wartime, when everyone's panicking, that's usually a good time to be owning stocks, at least for a longer term point of view.
That is how the market's behaving. Quite to the despair of the financial headline writers, the market's performing very well. Brent Aarons is here for a return on investment at MarketWatch.